The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
For more than a decade, he's been Philadelphia's destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Hey, Chris, thank you so much for doing what you're doing in the media.
Good morning, Chris. I listen to you every morning. Thanks.
Mr. Seagal, may he whose father gave us life keep you well and safe.
The United States Senate, Senator Mitch McConnell. Mitch, it's great to be with you.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaul on Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer and 990theanswer.com.
Boy, does this not typify where we are as a country? Glad to have you here. Good morning. By the way, somebody asked me yesterday, when is it appropriate to stop saying Happy New Year? And I said, I always give it the first week. I give it through Friday, and then I stop saying it. That's my personal governor on that. So I still wish you a Happy New Year this week. There are still people popping back onto the show that have been away. This is the first time we've connected. Even though I've been back since Tuesday, there are some of you that are just checking in. So I recognize that, which is why I extend Happy New Year greetings throughout the first of the year. And the first week. But then I knock it off. I'm not one of these Christmas-like guys till February kind of people. I'm really not. And tomorrow is technically on the ecumenical calendar. It's the day of Epiphany. So we are still in the textbook definition, 12 days of Christmas. Do you know that, Fast Eddie?
I actually do, yes.
A lot of people do not know, the 12 days of Christmas. We're in it now. Like January 6th is the 12th day of Christmas.
Absolutely. That's Chris, you were there in Germany. What the holiday markets, I went on December 26th, and they were all up that whole week. It was awesome.
Yeah, like I've always kind of clung to the ecumenical calendar for Christmas, and I've never felt the least bit bad. Some people, the Christmas Day, 5 p.m., and people start ripping down Christmas decorations. They're on to, I don't know. What is it? What's next? President's Day or right. Valentine's Day. I'm like, can we give it like the 12th, the partridge and the pear tree and the whole thing? Like, that's actually tomorrow, believe it or not. Of course, now January 6th has an entirely new celebration. That's the day more dramatic than January, or more dramatic than Pearl Harbor and 9/11. January 6th is no longer the 12th day of Christmas. It's Insurrection Day, which is sort of a metaphor for the state of the country. Anyway, glad to have you here today. I don't know. It reminds me of that line in what movie was it? Was it Ghostbusters? Bill Murray, dogs and cats sleeping together, mass hysteria.
Yeah,
nothing makes sense anymore. You got Biden out there slapping backs with jolly old crow Mitch yesterday. You got that? They are so mad and confused that Joe Biden. I don't know why they're the same guy, the old jolly, crusty fossils from the United States Senate of decades. Why is it a surprise that they're out palling around yesterday? Listen to this.
The United States Senate, Senator Mitch McConnell. Mitch, it's great to be with you. I asked permission if I could say something nice about him. I campaigned for him or against him, whichever helped him most, but Mitch, it wasn't easy to get this done, and it wouldn't have gotten done no matter all the work so many others have done and by writing the legislation and dropping it in. It wouldn't have happened without your hand. It just wouldn't have gotten done.
And wow.
I thank you for that.
What a day. What a moment. That's enough. That'll do. By the way, does Gramps sound sick again to you? He's got a lozenge in his mouth. I noticed yesterday before he was going to board Marine One, he took some press questions. Ha! Ha! They got the loud screaming engine on the lawn behind him, so he can't hear anyway. You can barely hear him. And the Mr. President, blah, 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 blah. And he's got that stupid Hall's lozenge in his mouth. And I said, he's sick again. I watch these things, folks. I don't know why. He's sick. There's something wrong with him. He sounds sick again. Can you hear it? He's caught another damn cold. I wondered this week why I feel like I've heard nothing from him and I'm not even talking about him or even thinking about him. He's been hiding out. He's sick. He's on the backside of yet another. I bet he's got COVID again. Anyway, neither here nor there. Our friend Bonchi from Red State will be here, and he's written about this. Joe Biden confounds onlookers during backslapping joint event with Mitch McConnell. It's been a while, he says, since I've written a piece about Joe Biden's penchant for confounding audiences. But to be fair, there's been a lot of stuff going on to take up everyone's time. He's exactly right. Biden has literally not been on my mind in weeks, which is kind of amazing that he's supposedly president of the United States. I've not thought about him. And I'm not kidding. Until yesterday, I saw one headline that Biden was very troubled or some such by the speakership debate going on amongst Republicans. Right. Very troubled. Well, if Biden's concerned about what the Republicans are fighting over, then I guess that's sure. So Biden's out slapping backs with McConnell and he's just restless and very upset, very concerned about the fight inside there. Do you believe any of this? This feels insane. So we'll talk with Bonchi about that coming up. But meanwhile, the real analysis that should be happening about this House Speaker debate, where's it going on? Save Tucker Carlson. I'm going to set Tucker aside as his own sterling example and category. Where is the most meaningful and thoughtful discussion about this House Speaker debate going on? It might surprise you. It's going on at CNN, ladies and gentlemen. Not making it up. Much like you sit and you wonder, how in the hell is it that we're just now openly palling around together, Mitch McConnell and Joe Biden? You would also find yourself completely confounded to hear people like Jake Tapper over at CNN assure his audience, as I have been. I mean, Jake Tapper could have done my show yesterday based on the way he sounds. Listen to this.
Let me just turn and just say, like, I know the viewers out there, this probably seems like chaotic and insane, but A, this is democracy. I mean, we can't pretend that this is, I mean, I think Congressman Gallagher was right earlier today. He said this is messy and democracy is messy. It's a feature, not a bug. That's true. These people are exercising their right to do that. And a lot of them, I don't know all of them, but a lot of the 20 rebels are voting the way they're voting because they actually want substantive changes to the rules.
I think that is really an open question. I was literally
You disagree with me.
No. I actually think that. First of all, there's some portion of them. I just think we don't know how many of them actually want substantive rules.
Okay, I don't know who she is, but Jake Tapper is right. It's a feature, not a bug. I have to tell you something, folks. I was about to come out of my skin last night, and not because I was watching it. I wasn't. Some people started texting me. My phone's blowing up last night. I'm going to be just blunt with you because my patience has now worn to the point that there's no reason to be polite. I used to try to play patty cake and just avoid this conversation. But now, and it's really been since the Pennsylvania primary and the Senate race that I've just decided, okay, enough. Sean Hannity has become an irritant to me that I can just no longer ignore. And I typically don't like, food fights amongst we in conservative media. It's not interesting to me. And I really try to stay in my own lane and I try very hard to just ignore what everyone else is doing. That's always been an operating principle of mine. There are people that I genuinely admire and learn from and like to watch and listen to because I take things from them and learn from them. But as a general matter, if there's someone out there doing what I do that I don't find particularly impressive, I just ignore them. And he's always been one. I don't find him uniquely talented or intelligent or impressive. I think Sean Hannity is one of the luckiest broadcasters on planet Earth. I think Sean has always benefited from being number two to Rush Limbaugh. I think Sean Hannity was the right guy at the right time in history to be in the bullpen, the number two hitter behind the leadoff hitter, Rush Limbaugh, 30 years ago. And for that, and he worked very hard, and he got connected to the right people, And as such, following Rush Limbaugh nationally for decades, he won life's broadcasting lottery. It is not because he's the most talented broadcaster. It's because he won life's lottery. And good. I know some of you are going to say, oh, you're just jealous, Stigall. I'm not. I've felt this for a long time, and I've never said it until right now, today. I've been doing this myself for 20 years, and I've never spoken this way about Sean until today. But I'm going to say this to you now. I don't think Sean Hannity has some sort of unique, impressive Mount Rushmore place in conservatism history. Just because he's been on the air for a long time does not make him a rock-ribbed, principled conservative. And he seems to like to play that card. I've been on the air for 30 years. Okay, well, I've been on the air for 20. I anticipate, God willing, assuming, you know, I don't get hit by a truck or Joe Biden doesn't destroy the economy to the point advertisers can't afford it anymore, I assume I'll be doing this for 30 years. But I don't think longevity behind a microphone means you're somebody that everybody ought to pay attention to and listen to. And I think you actually have to produce. I think you actually have to make sense to your constituency, your audience. I think you actually have to have a track record of being correct. And I also think when you're incorrect, you have to own it. If you want to have any credibility over decades of broadcasting and an audience that respects you, you've got to be able to say when you got it wrong. And in the last 2 or 3 years, Sean Hannity has been more wrong than just about anybody that I've watched in conservative media. Sean Hannity is the guy that browbeat everyone in his audience that we were all supposed to take the shot and shut up about it. Sean Hannity was a lunatic cultist about that shot and a panicker. And ran around screaming and yelling like Chicken Little without asking questions because, you know, it was Trump's shot. So because, you know, it was Trump's warp speed. So, you know, as such, he had to go out there and do the bidding. So every American had a duty to inject themselves with the shot because Sean said so. He was wrong. And he's never apologized for that. Now he just pretends that he's always been Mr. Freedom. And I always said, well, it's up to you. No, you didn't. And there's plenty of tape if people cared enough to go back and study it. I don't, but my memory is long. And you were on the wrong side of that, Sean Hannity. Then you came to Pennsylvania, and you decided to weigh in very personally on a three-way Pennsylvania primary you had no business weighing in on, and you browbeat and you bullied anybody who didn't support Dr. Oz. And you shamed and you trashed a legitimate running contender to Dr. Oz in Kathy Barnett. And so you got your way. You got your Dr. Oz. And you browbeat and you bullied John Fetterman because you thought you were accomplishing something by making fun of him wearing a hoodie. And John Fetterman won in devastating fashion and embarrassed the hell out of you, quite frankly. You were wrong. Again, you were wrong. And this is just in the last couple of years. You've been terribly wrong, Sean. In fact, to my knowledge, you don't even have a broadcasting home in Philadelphia anymore. If I'm not mistaken. And for good reason, because no one listens to your show. You're not a good entertainer. You're not an interesting show, Sean. So not only are you wrong, you're not even wrong in an entertaining way, sir. And so now, I guess it should come as no surprise that Sean Hannity is using the real estate on Fox News, you know, because he's been on TV for 30 years, so everybody should listen to me. Yeah, okay, I got it. So what's Sean screaming about now? Well, he has Lauren Boebert, one of the 20 recalcitrant insurrectionist Republican. Now, remember what can we play Jake Tapper again just for context? Because this is amazing. This is what Sean Hannity should sound like if he were an actual conservative American. Jake Tapper is how Sean Hannity should sound like. That's how bad this has gotten. Listen.
Let me just turn and just say, like, I know the viewers out there, this probably seems like chaotic and insane, but A, this is democracy. I mean, we can't pretend that this is, I mean, I think Congressman Gallagher was right earlier today. He said this is messy and democracy is messy. It's a feature, not a bug. That's true. These people are exercising their right to do that. And a lot of them, I don't know all of them, but a lot of the 20 rebels are voting the way they're voting because they actually want substantive changes to the rules.
I think.
Yeah. So juxtapose that with Sean beating up Lauren Boebert last night.
We're in day two. It's okay. The government isn't spending money, sending it to Ukraine. So the American taxpayers are certainly winning.
Politically, but, you know, Congresswoman, you agree, and I agree on most things. We don't disagree on many things.
Yes, we do, Sean.
And I do have respect for you.
And I believe that history will show that I'm on the right side of this, Sean.
You can believe you're in your position, but I'm using your words. You said to President Trump, you said, we're very clear. He doesn't have 218, so you need to ask him to withdraw. If by Friday you and your group of 20 don't have a name with 30 votes, is it time for you to withdraw? And if not, why do you support a double standard? Last question.
Kevin McCarthy does not have 218 votes. Kevin McCarthy will not be speaker.
And you have 20.
Kevin
I asked
McCarthy
you a very specific question. If by
Listen,
Friday,
when we
you
get
don't
this
have
right,
30.
I will not, Sean. I will not withdraw. Our
You'll
asks
not.
Were not petty of Kevin McCarthy. They were not self-serving. We simply were asking for commitments on what the American people want to see. They want to see a vote on term limits, a vote on the Texas border plan to secure the southern border.
Congresswoman,
and for crying
with
out
all
loud, Sean, we asked for a vote on a budget that actually balances. Imagine. Imagine a Congress that stops
so
spending
you
money
only
that
have
we don't
30
have.
People
we are going
supporting
to get this right,
you.
And we are going to get the right speaker, Sean.
If you only have 30, to be clear, you will not withdraw.
30 is going to be a beautiful number
But you're
to
telling
reach.
Kevin McCarthy and the 203 people that support him to withdraw because they don't have 218. That's what you're saying.
Look, it's obvious by tonight's motion to adjourn that Kevin McCarthy and his supporters are already getting voter fatigue. And
I asked you a simple question, Congresswoman. I feel like I'm getting a liberal answer from a liberal.
I'm not going to support Kevin McCarthy, Sean.
I feel like I'm listening to
Rachel
Maddow.
I only have 30 votes.
Yeah, okay, so that's you get it. This goes back and forth this way. I know he understands what's going on here, but he's pretending he doesn't. You'd have to be a stone-cold moron to not understand the process. Jake Tapper at CNN understands the process. Sean is being purposely obtuse because his buddy, Kevin, isn't getting his way. He has Kevin McCarthy on almost every night for the last years. So his pal, Kevin, isn't getting his way. And so Sean is calling up people that he would regularly have on his show. And now he's browbeating them because they're not behaving. And Sean's big smart take is, if you're in the opposition to Kevin McCarthy and you don't have 218 people to support your opposition or a name by Friday, then you should stop opposing Kevin McCarthy. In what world, in what universe is that a negotiation? In what world, in what universe, in our system of government as constructed? This is a system, this as I can't even believe I'm saying this. As Jake Tapper said, this is a feature of our government, not a bug. This is not a fluke. This has historical precedent. This is not a big deal. You know what really ticks me off is that people like Sean Hannity seem to think that the conservative approach to government in 2023 is to just coronate and rubber stamp, like we're a monarchy, like the queen dies, we bury her, and we christen King Charles on Tuesday. We're not a monarchy, you buffoon. We're a representative republic, and all 435 members of this representative republic in the House of Representatives get to have a say. And in a representative republic, we very specifically, it has been designed by our founders, you buffoon. You cologne and cufflink buffoon, Sean Hannity. Our republic is designed where all of those members, including those who are in the minority, have a voice and they get to express it. And the rights of the minority are protected. And the point of our system is, if you can't cobble together a magic number of 218, you don't get to become speaker. Screaming and yelling at 20 people who don't support a man and won't give him 218, screaming and yelling at them and calling them bad people and immoral as Newt has been. Isn't it disappointing and dispiriting to start the new year watching some of these people that we thought are champions of conservatism screaming and yelling and browbeating at people. And I, by the way, I have friends doing the same thing. What the hell is it? I have friends in Congress, staffers. You know what a staffer, a friend of mine who's a staffer of a member of Congress said yesterday? Conservative guy. These SOBs, I can't believe these 20. Why is he mad? He said, and this was his direct text. He said, I'm out of a job. I'm technically unemployed until this is resolved, said my friend. Now, I love him, but I thought to myself, okay, so now we're getting down to it. So now this is just a big employment agency. The monarchy is what this is. This is Windsor Castle. And you people are just staffing the castle? Have we forgotten what we're doing here? This is the United States of America. This is a representative republic. These people are sent to Washington, D.C. to represent the voter. This is not a coronation. We don't have that. I realize that in the modern era, again, our perspectives are often very limited to what we know since we've been birthed and while we're above ground. And it seems like we have zero perspective on anything beyond ourselves anymore and beyond a couple of decades. We were constructed for this kind of fight. We were built for fights. I said this yesterday on Twitter. We were very specifically designed for conflict. This is a good thing. I say again, in a constitutional republic, the rights of the minority are protected. 20 Republicans who don't believe McCarthy is ready to be speaker have rights. Bullying those people is very liberal, actually. Sean, that's very Democrat of you. I mean, how strong a guy are you? And let's really talk about Kevin McCarthy. How strong is Kevin McCarthy when he needs Sean Hannity on TV to browbeat his opposition for him? How strong is Kevin McCarthy? Not very. And this is a sincere question, and I mean this. I'm asking you, and this is a challenge I open to every member of this audience. Who? Name the person. Fast Eddie, go ahead and find it if you can. Who's the person who's made a very specific, credible case for Kevin McCarthy, the man? Have you heard it made by anyone?
Honestly, I haven't, no.
I've heard plenty of attacks on people who oppose him. I've heard the case made, we've got lots to do. We don't have time for this. We've got important investigations to launch, and we've got important hearings to have, and we're an embarrassment, and the Democrats are laughing, and there's chaos. I've heard all that, but I haven't heard one person make a case as to why this guy, Kevin McCarthy, should be the Speaker of the House of Representatives. Not one. Isn't that interesting? I am stunned at the way so many in the pundit class are rankled when our system, literally designed for this very fight, it was built for this fight. In the 1700s, brilliant men constructed a system built for this very conflict. And unfortunately, we have so bastardized it over the years, we're now on a heat-and-eat cable news 24-hour news cycle deal where we have coronation events. And anytime people want to pump the brakes and say, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with the way this election was counted in a couple of states, let's hold off on certifying it, that's now insurrection. Some members of a party say, I don't know that I like this guy as speaker. I'm not sure he's the best fit for what we want to try to achieve. I'm not going to vote for him. That's chaos. No, that's our system. We're built for conflict, not mutual self-pleasure. You know, I wrote about this at the Harumph Society last night. I don't know if you're a member yet. I hope you are. If you are, you got an email from me about this last night. I was so ticked off. I sat down and I wrote about this. This is a weak man. No matter what you think of these 20 Republicans, it is inarguable at this point. Kevin McCarthy is a weak human being. You know how I know? Would Nancy Pelosi ever allow something like this to spill out on CNN or MSNBC when she was up for vote for Speaker. In fact, when there was a bit of a hiccup with people like the Squad and AOC and Ilhan Omar, did that spill out into days of fights over who would be the next Speaker? Did it? Do you remember that? Did Nancy Pelosi ever have this trouble inside her caucus? And when there was just a tiny flare-up, remember AOC did a little sit-in or something at Pelosi's office for a hot second? That went away quickly, didn't it? You know why? Because Nancy Pelosi's a nut cutter. She's a lot of things. She's a political hack. She's bad for the country. Glad she's gone. But one thing she was tough as nails. She was that. She was tough. Because that's what leaders do. They squash opposition. They lead through strength. And if they can't squash their opposition, they appease their opposition, they cut deals, and they get it done. This guy has been warned for 6 weeks he didn't have this job. 6 weeks he's been told. I know that because we have the tape of people like Matt Gaetz warning before Christmas. He doesn't have the votes. And everybody rolled their eyes and said, shut up, Gaetz. And I said on this show, and I remember saying, and I remember other people saying, This guy is not a fait accompli. It's not a lock. It's not a slam dunk that McCarthy is going to win this election. So here we are 6 weeks later. And in fact, that's true. He doesn't have the vote. And so Sean Hannity is left to do nothing but scream and browbeat these people that have been warning for weeks. They're not just going to go along to get along. Tucker Carlson seems to get it. Charlie Hurt over at the Washington Examiner seems to get it. Take a listen to their conversation about this last night.
Hey, Tucker. You know, we're not running Congress. We're, you know, we're not taking any kind of position on this one or the other. But it is a little bit amazing to see surrogates for Kevin McCarthy attack anybody using the twin tactics of fear and threats that the left uses. Want to try to convince people. What is this?
Well, it's another piece of evidence proving that these people are terrible at politics. And of course, you're exactly right. If you wanted to win people over, and if you actually listen to Boebert and you listen to these supposed never McCarthy people talk, they're not looking for an off ramp right now because they're having more fun than Democrats are. And that's understandable. They're you know, enthusiastic politicians. I understand that. But they're keeping their options open. And their options are open because they think that they might be able to get something out of Kevin McCarthy. And when you stop and look at this, and if you take them seriously, and I do take them seriously, you ask yourself, okay, what's the problem here? The problem, it's real simple. It's spending. That's the problem. The problem is spending. And if Kevin McCarthy could convince those 20 people that he was going to do something that was going to stop the spending, then he could probably make headway. You know, last night you mentioned a couple of really great ideas about positions that, you know, that Kevin McCarthy could offer. I would add a couple more. One would be that he could make a vow, and he could make this to the American people, as well as Democrats and Republicans, that he's not going to put a single bill on a spending bill on the floor that's not about one agency. They're going to vote on agency by agency. No more omnibuses. And not only that, every bill that he puts on the floor is going to include a 10% cut, just like everybody's employer has had to do in their private lives over the past couple of years, just like every family household has had to do. They've had to cut their spending by 10%. The second thing that he would do is, and he could make that vow that if he puts a single bill on the floor that comes from Mitch McConnell in the Senate and Chuck Schumer that is different from that, then they can recall him as senator. The second thing he would do is not another dime, not another bill spending one dime on Ukraine until we fix our own border. The minute we fix our own border, we can have another vote on this stuff if you want. I hope it fails, but we can at least have a vote on it. And I think if McCarthy offered those two things, I think those could be real game changers for the people, the holdouts.
So that's Charlie Hurt at the Washington Examiner, and he's exactly right. What about that? You know, a strong leader, if you really want this job, why don't you just whip it out, Kevin McCarthy, and prove that you do? And shut these 20 people up by saying, all right, what do you want? What do you want? You want it? I'll do it. So supposedly today, by the way, I don't think it's not going to happen. I'm not telling you it's not looking good. Andy Biggs is going to be with us today, too. So we'll get a take. Now, 7 rounds of voting, and the same 20 people have held through 7 rounds. We're going to go into an 8th today. I still think Kevin McCarthy could become the next Speaker of the House. CNN is reporting this morning that McCarthy is apparently now proposing concessions. Just one vote needed to oust the Speaker. This is what CNN reports. I don't know whether this is true. More Freedom Caucus members on rules committees. Votes on bills including term limits for members and border security, as Charlie just said. So maybe that's true. And you know what? That's a deal. And that's how you strike deals. And that's how you shut this up. And you know what a good leader would have done? He would have been having these conversations 6 weeks ago instead of this week. Because Kevin McCarthy is weak. This is why we're here. This fight, if you don't like it and you're uncomfortable with it and it makes you mad, makes you upset, do you know whose fault it is? Kevin freaking McCarthy and no one else. And it's his weakness and his fecklessness, which is typified by the entirety of the Republican Party's leadership. Mitch McConnell being slapped on the back by Joe Biden yesterday. We're tired of it. And if there are only 20 people in the United States House of Representatives willing to stand up for the rest of us to say we're tired of it, so be it. But I stand with them, and I sure as hell don't stand with Mr. You know, $30 million on Fox News, shilling for his pal Kevin McCarthy. I've had just about all I can stand of Sean Hannity telling the rest of us out here the way it's going to be. Just because I've been on the air for 30 years. Yeah, and in 30 years, you've amassed a great deal of money and pals in a power center, and you have forgotten who you are and who made you, sir. And you are no Rush Limbaugh.
Good morning, Philly. This is Dennis Prager, weekday afternoons at 1 on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. Now, here's Chris DeGaulle.
A shocker. CNN is adding to their washed-up loser roster. Adam Kinzinger now is going to work for CNN, because of course he is. CNN, where disreputable losers go to get promoted. Guys who literally lose their jobs because they've either been fired for insubordination or lawbreaking or their voters don't support them anymore. CNN says, you're due some airtime. It's a remarkable business model. Okay. Anyway, 610-850-0990, the number. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. Sit tight today because Andy Biggs, one of those 20 awful people who just refused to go along to get along and coronate Kevin McCarthy, Andy Biggs is going to be here at 8 o'clock. We had a great conversation yesterday with Scott Perry, who, by the way, I'm sorry, I didn't know this, and I wished I did. It was my fault. It slipped me. You may have known this, Fast Eddie. He's now the Freedom Caucus chairman. Biggs had been, and Perry is now the chairman of the Freedom Caucus, which I didn't know. So not only is he a great friend of the show and a Pennsylvania representative, but he's now the guy running basically the true conservative opposition in the House. So that's very good news for this show going forward.
Oh, absolutely, Chris. And it shows you, I just want to make a point real quick about that. The Freedom Caucus, notice how they are not paying attention in any way to the negative crap that's put out there by the Inquirer and all the negative press that Perry's received, all the hits he's taken last year, and he's the leader now.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, Newt Gingrich attack. I mean, I love Newt. I do. I really like Newt a lot. But I, you know, the way he is attacking these people. And actually, I had Laura Ingraham. I was up late last night. I don't know why. I couldn't sleep. Laura Ingraham was on, and Newt was on with her. And at one point, he was saying they were talking about something else entirely. It wasn't this. But Newt was going on and on about why it was so important to be a Republican and why if you're a Republican, you know, welcome to the Republican Party because we're free thinkers and, you know, we don't just go along to get along and we're not part of the herd. And so if you're somebody that values free, independent thought, you vote Republican. And I thought, excuse me, has he hit his head? He's literally been on TV for the last 3 days talking about how anybody who opposes Kevin McCarthy should shut up, that they're selfish narcissists. Anyway, sorry. I said I wanted to hear what you had to say about it. I mean that. So let's go right to it. In King of Prussia to get started, it's Chris. Chris, good morning. Happy New Year. Welcome in.
Good morning, Chris. Happy New Year. Chris, this is why I tune in to the Chris DeGaulle Show every day. This is fantastic radio. This is perfection. Wow. I was sitting at my kitchen counter last night, my wife and I planning our retirement home out in Missouri, and unfortunately couldn't get up. Sean Hannity is blessed that Tucker Carlson is his lead-in. Otherwise, he'd probably lose.
Sean has had a lot of lovely lead-ins over the years, hasn't he?
He has. But, you know, this Kevin McCarthy guy, you know, why couldn't Kevin McCarthy show us some statesmanship, get over to Mitch McConnell, talk to Mitch McConnell and say, hey, Mitch, just get your team to pass a CR. Let's get to January. We'll get our team in place, and then we'll put together a budget that's going to be beneficial to Americans. He couldn't do it. He's weak.
Apparently. Or he tried or claims he tried. I mean, I remember before Christmas he was running around saying, this is outrageous. They need to wait for us. Wait till we're seated. And I approved of that, and I said good for him for saying it. But a real leader, you're right, would have been able to get to Mitch McConnell and say, dude, what are you doing? You're screwing me here, and would have made a compelling argument. So what does that tell us? That means if, in fact, he did do that, Mitch McConnell extended the middle finger and says, I don't respect you. Take a hike, and patted him on the head and, you know, gave him a sucker and sent him on his way. So you're right. He's weak. I mean, so we're here because he's weak. This is Kevin McCarthy's fault. No one else's. Not these 20 people. Right, Chris?
That's correct. And those statements to Mitch, that was all bluster. That's all for the media. That's like Trey Gowdy and all excitement. And they get nothing done. Nothing done.
Yeah, Gowdy was
great
another
radio,
one, I guess.
Sorry,
go ahead.
Great radio, Chris. Love it.
Well, thank you, my friend. I appreciate you. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll be in touch for weeks and months and years to come. 610-850-0990, the telephone number. Let's head to Florida. One of our online listeners, we appreciate it, at 990theanswer.com, streaming app. AM 990, the Answer streaming app, if that's the way you listen. There are lots of ways to listen online. Bill's one of them. Thank you, Bill. Welcome in. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Mega harumps from Matt Gaetz, his first congressional district in the panhandle, holding down the central time zone fortress. Yesterday's Perry piece was a keeper. The first paragraph out of the gate needs to be on television, needs to be played daily, and McCarthy needs to be confronted with what Perry put out there. Perry would not lie. He told the truth, and McCarthy needs to be confronted with those truths, as does Sean Hannity. And until we know the damn truth about this situation, we should not be pushing McCarthy anywhere other than off a cliff.
Proverbially speaking, of course. Rhetorically speaking. Bill, I appreciate it. Thank you, my man. Great to hear from you. Well said. Yeah, that Scott Perry interview is worth your time. If you didn't get to hear him yesterday, now the Freedom Caucus chair and one of the 20. Biggs with us today, as I said, at 8. Yesterday, Perry with us. And you can go to the podcast today if you'd like to hear what Perry had to say about it. Go to ChrisStegall.com or wherever you stream podcasts and check that out. Let's go to Felton, Delaware. Talk to John next. John, good morning. Glad you called.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
And to you.
I have to totally 100% agree with you on Sean Hannity. I find myself turning him off more and more often and going to Fox Business News, to be honest with you. I don't know what he's done, but it just, you know, he's had some interesting people on. He's broken a lot of good stories, but it's just getting too. It's sort of like back in the day when it finally broke that he had that opioid dependence. I could tell there was something wasn't right. And the other thing I need to ask you about a year ago, Matt Gaetz was basically a predator. He was supposedly running a prostitute ring. What the hell happened to that story?
Well, it was largely discredited. I mean, it was investigated and found to be untrue, as I understand it. I didn't follow it closely, but he was vindicated.
Well, who Well, then they need to prosecute the person that started this thing. I mean, these people.
Well,
the Freedom Caucus is going to hold people responsible, and that's what needs to be done with that system.
Yeah, my understanding is that came out of the FBI as well, which is, again, Matt Gaetz, much like Scott Perry, whose cell phone was snatched while he was on family vacation by the FBI. These people are targets of their own government that they're a part of and working in. They have every right to be furious. And I look, there are some of you who are cynics and just don't believe this is sincere. I mean, I've gotten the notes from you, too, that say this is all hat and no cattle and McCarthy's still going to be speaker and this is all for show. I can't know the true hearts of any of these people. I don't know them. I know none of these people. I don't have friendships with I am personal friends with two members of Congress. Two Republicans, both of whom support McCarthy. And you know what? I like them. I respect them. They're friends. Whatever. Like, they're independent men who can vote the way they want. If they ask my opinion, I share with them. I don't support it. I don't hate them. They've pretty consistently voted the right way. One of them's a freshman who's, you know, yet to vote. He feels an alliance to McCarthy, and so he feels like he's got it. But, like, other than these two guys, I don't, you know, and some staffers on Capitol Hill who work for members of Congress, these people aren't personal to me. And that's the problem with so many of the people that you listen to and you watch on TV and radio, I'm sorry to tell you. They have deeply personal relationships with these people in Washington, D.C., and they don't disclose it. And I think it's very important that we disclose our relationships to our audience so that you can understand where we come from. I think it's perfectly okay to be best friends with Kevin McCarthy. All right? I think it's fine if Sean and Kevin golf together and yacht together and have white wine spritzers together on the weekend. I think all that's lovely and fine. I just think Sean should say that. Instead of screaming and yelling at people in opposition to Kevin McCarthy and suggesting they're bad people, he should say, I like Kevin McCarthy, and here's why. I think Kevin McCarthy's an effective leader, and here's why. Kevin McCarthy has been my friend for decades, and here's why, and why I believe he's going to make a great effective speaker. And I'm going to put it out there and say, here's what I think he'll deliver. And if he doesn't, I'll be the first person to have him on the show and criticize him as my friend. Now, wouldn't that be the more fair and honest way to present yourself if you're Sean Hannity? It would be to me. Now, maybe you don't like it. But why lie? Why lie about who you are? And this audience is smart. And people like Sean have gotten away from respecting you the way that I do. I respect you too much. When I call you the smartest audience in all of radio, I mean it. Your BS meter is really sensitive. You don't have tolerance for people you know are BSing you and lying to your face. You know it. You can sniff it out. You can sense it. Your spidey senses tingle even if you can't put your finger on it. Something seems amiss. What's going on here? People are saying things that are very out of character for the way they've behaved and been and the things they've said over many, many years. And this Kevin McCarthy thing is one of them. Your spidey senses are tingling. I don't know the heads and hearts of any of these people that we're talking about this morning. I don't. But I think there's a lot of dishonesty here and a total lack of goodwill. This is our system. This is not about coronations. This is not about backslapping with buddies. This is a representative republic. This is not a cable news-driven government. At least it shouldn't be. Richard's in media. Richard, I'm glad you called. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Chris. Excellent opening monologue. You're always on point. Always great summation of the situation. You know.
Thank you, my friend.
I was thinking about Trump as to why he backed McCarthy, and I kind of think it's almost a little bit of reverse psychology, because if he didn't, then it would make those 20 congressmen could make them be open targets for the left a little bit more. The other thing I wanted to say, I'm really surprised by Newt and Hannity. Like you said, I wonder about their motivation in all this. I really do. And the other thing I wanted to say, boy, I'd love to see Jim Jordan in there.
Oh, he'd be great. He'd be wonderful. Yeah. I'm going to ask Andy Biggs that question. Like, when these 20 say, you know, they want to see this Byron Donald, for instance, who's stellar himself, by the way, how great would that be? And thank you, Richard. Byron Donald is a member of Congress from Florida. He happens to be a black man. And again, I'm not into identity politics, but how wonderful would it be to have a principled soldier of conservatism who happens to be of color as Speaker of the House? Wouldn't that be sexy as hell for the Republican brand? I think it would. Why not him? He was one of the guys that was volleyed out there as a possible nominee. Jim Jordan was too. Biggs was as well. So I'm going to ask Biggs today, like these guys, when their names get tossed out there, apparently it's hard to get to 218. But like, is that a legit thing? Do they want it? Would they serve if they got a coalition put together? Like, so we'll try to get into the inner workings of how this thing plays out. As I've told you from the beginning of the week, my head is not on fire about that. If this goes on for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, doesn't bother me. Some suggest it ends by tomorrow. I would be surprised if Kevin McCarthy allows this to go on beyond Friday. It's already terribly embarrassing for him. It would be surprising if this goes on beyond today, honestly. But with every vote, he gets weaker and weaker and weaker. And the point of these things is, that's just it. These 20 people probably know that Kevin McCarthy's a lock, but not before they extract some concessions from him, because that's the beauty of negotiations, folks. That's the beauty of our system. They want promises from him before he's christened. And I love that. It's high time.
Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. WNTP, Philadelphia, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. For more than a decade, he's been your destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Morning, Chris. Thanks for the great show every day.
Thank you so much for your honesty. You are a prophet, and I'm a witness.
Traveled over 140 countries around the world. I'll paraphrase the phrase in my own neighborhood. The rest of the countries, the world's not a patch on our jeans. If we do what we want to do, we need to do. It's never been a good bet.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
GOP mutiny enters third day, says MSNBC. GOP mutiny. Fox very proud of Kevin McCarthy. Fox News, Kevin McCarthy not backing down. Oh, yeah. Mr. Machismo, Kevin McCarthy. If anybody exudes toughness and fortitude, it's Kevin McCarthy, right? You know, I've never really put a whole lot into this. I know some of you in this audience are firm believers, and I don't even know if this is true or if it's still the case, but for a while there was conversation, or it is true or was true, that Paul Ryan, upon leaving the speakership of the House of Representatives, joined Fox News as a board member. I don't know if that's still true, but what I do know is Fox News is full of these former Republican House members. It's full of them. Like, there's a half dozen former Republican members of the House of Representatives who now have shows on Fox. And nearly all of them are screaming and yelling about why Kevin McCarthy needs to be the next Speaker of the House. So this is starting to feel, Fox News in particular, is starting to feel like a Kevin McCarthy fanboy network. Save people like Tucker Carlson and I think Laura Ingraham, although I don't know, I can't speak to Laura. And it's not even about being anti-Kevin McCarthy. It's about supporting the fight and the debate amongst ourselves. Anyone watching what's just happened in this most recent election and what's been going on in the Republican Party has to be honest and understand that we're in trouble. If you're a Republican voter and you don't have criticisms and you don't have concerns and problems with who's currently leading the party, both structurally inside Congress and outside it at the RNC and people like Ronna McDaniel, if you're not concerned, you're part of the problem. I don't know how else to put it, ladies and gentlemen. So it's not about being against. It's about what are you for? What do you want? And these 20 people that oppose McCarthy are being very clear about what they want. No one that I hear on Fox News who's demanding everyone support McCarthy, none of them are telling me why. Have you noticed that? No one is saying why Kevin McCarthy. They just keep shouting, this is chaos. I know our friend Bonchi at Red State understands that. He does fantastic work. Checking in with him for the new year on a whole host of things he's been writing about. Bonchi, first of all, welcome in and happy new year to you, sir.
Hey, you too, Chris. Good to be back with you.
So let's take a 30,000-foot view and start with this thing. I don't know how you see it. You just heard what I said. You concur? Do you see it differently? Tell me what your assessment of what's going on here is.
No, I think I mostly concur. I mean, I don't understand. In fact, I think the dumbest critique of this whole thing is that it's chaos and embarrassing. Like, I don't get that at all. In fact, I think that I'd much rather see less conformity and less falling in line and less a cabal of elites and leadership demanding how everybody votes. I'd rather see less of that than everybody falling in line and just voting for McCarthy because that's what everybody tells them to do. The other night, I think it was the last night, Tucker went through kind of the pros and cons of both sides of the argument, even though he's, you know, I'm sure you've watched the clip of him. He's pretty firmly anti-McCarthy, but
yeah.
He kind of went through both sides. So, I mean, I get it. I get that there are complex, compelling arguments on both sides. I mean, none of the arguments on both sides tell you why McCarthy should be speaker, but I get from like a technical level why people argue that right now. On the other hand, I think it's still a great thing that people are standing up and voting their conscience and how they feel things should go. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. And I don't see any harm in letting this continue and letting it play out.
I feel like I've had a stroke when I listened to Jake Tapper at CNN sound more like what you'd hope somebody like Sean Hannity would sound. And I don't know if you heard this, but let me play it and get your reaction. I've been playing this already a lot this morning. Jake Tapper yesterday and his assessment of these 21 people. Listen.
Let me just turn and just say, like, I know the viewers out there, this probably seems like chaotic and insane, but A, this is democracy. I mean, we can't pretend that this is, I mean, I think Congressman Gallagher was right earlier today. He said this is messy and democracy is messy. It's a feature, not a bug. That's true. These people are exercising their right to do that. And a lot of them, I don't know all of them, but a lot of the 20 rebels are voting the way they're voting because they actually want substantive changes to the rules.
I mean, that's astounding coming from Jake Tapper and yeah. CNN. I completely agree with him.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of concerning that he sounds more in line with what I feel like the correct answer is than Sean Hannity. I don't know if you saw Sean last night, but it was just
embarrassing.
There was the trend going around that he just demolished Lauren Boebert, and I watched the clip. I didn't see it that way at all. He kept interrupting her. She's just trying to make the point that she's voting the way that she thinks she's supposed to vote in her own mind, her own conscience, and he's just like, well, Trump told you to vote this way. Why are you not voting this way? Well, that's a really dumb argument, isn't it? Don't we want people to think for themselves? You know, and so I don't know. It just the entire thing bugs me. I get that people want the House to get started. They want the investigations to get started. I also get the idea that, you know, there's not somebody else who can get to 218 that stepped forward yet. On the other hand, I don't think the idea that all of these guys are just sowing chaos and need to fall in line because Donald Trump told them to or because Fox News told them to is the right answer either. I think people should be able to vote the way they want. And then at the end of the day, if McCarthy can't get the votes, he can't get the votes. Then you could go to a plan B or C or D after that.
Bonchi has written about this at Red State. Donald Trump demands Lauren Boebert fall in line. She's having none of it. I'm piling on a lot today. Sean Hannity is the same guy who demanded everybody take the shot. And Sean Hannity is the same guy that demanded in the Pennsylvania primary, Dr. Oz be the one we all support. And that Kathy Barnett was some sort of insurrectionist who wasn't worthy of our support. So Sean does not have a sterling track record of demands with me in Pennsylvania anyway.
No, I mean, I think Sean presents himself as anti-establishment, but every time that, you know, a decision needs to get made that would go against the establishment, he does exactly what they want, and then tries to beat people up who don't want to do what they want. So, yeah, I agree. I think his track record's not that great, and he's not the one to listen to here.
You have written a piece. This is apropos of nothing, but I actually am so glad to get into this. I've really not tackled this as a subject yet. You just wrote at Red State just before the first of the year, headline, "I regret to inform you that libs don't like Yellowstone and they're completely missing the point." I adore Yellowstone. I know it's a smash hit and it has been for some time. I'm a very recent adopter. Like, just in this last year, I've caught up on all of it and I'm now up to speed. And I just watched the mid-season finale last night with my wife on Paramount. So I'm all caught up. I've seen it all. I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't watched it. But on balance, it's just a tremendous show. And I've been having a conversation with a friend offline about the politics of it. And well, you tell me. Give me a sense of that show. If you, in fact, watch it, I gather you do, and you've written about it.
Yeah.
What you think?
I mean, my thoughts on Yellowstone, and then if you haven't watched the prequels, you need to watch those too. They're really, really good.
I haven't. Yeah,
make sure you get into those. But, I mean, my thoughts on Yellowstone are that it's a refreshing change compared to most of the junk that gets put out there by Hollywood. And I don't know if you consider it Hollywood or not, but I mean, it's a major show. So it's just a major change in the fact that it doesn't try to push, you know, as the critical drinker says, the message down your throat. It doesn't try to push that woke ideology down your throat. It's very much a throwback series in the kind of, you know, what I would just call Americanized values. You know, I mean, it's totally different, and that's why the liberals hate it. It doesn't try, you know, I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, but there's a wacko environmentalist on that started in season four, continues into season five. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's not like she comes out as the redemptive hero, like in most shows. You know what I mean? Like, no, she's
exactly.
Just a wacko environmentalist. In fact, she gets changed as far as her mindset goes. So it's like, you know, that's just a kind of, hopefully non-spoiler example of how the show takes ideas and doesn't turn them into the constant Hollywood tropes that are forced down our throat. And I think that's why it's so popular.
Yes, I agree with you completely. And in fact, what I think it does very, very well is it entertains those points of view. And then it says, okay, now here's our side of it. What it very well does is confront those points of view with the, if you will, the real world in that show, and says, okay, that's what you say about us, and here's what we really are. And the truth is far fuzzier and more gray than you'd like it to be on the hard left. And that's what I really appreciate about it.
Yeah, and there's a complexity to the show that just is absent in most of Hollywood. You know, the way I would describe, and the example I used in that article you're talking about is, I don't know if you've seen it, the Obi-Wan Kenobi show on Disney Plus, the Star Wars thing, but you know, there was a female character in there that, first of all, most of the fans hated that she was kind of shoved into the story because it took the spotlight away from who's supposed to be this major legacy character. But the moment that you saw her, you knew they're never going to let her stay and be the villain. Like, they're just not going to do it because of the identity politics involved. And sure enough, she gets this ridiculous redemption arc and yada, yada, yada. And that's what I kind of compared that to Yellowstone in the article, is that, you know, in Yellowstone, it's okay for a woman to be a villain. You know, it's okay for a minority to not be the hero of the show. You know what I mean? So it's not, it's not that you're looking for, quotas in that, oh my gosh, I've got to have white people be the heroes. Like, that's not it at all. What it's about is that you can have a white person be the hero, and the show is not going to telegraph how it's going to go based on identity politics. You understand what I'm saying? So it has nothing to do with race on our end. It's about how Hollywood uses race on their end and just destroys their storytelling.
It's so well. I would argue that most commercials on TV feel that way today. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I think they kind of shoehorned it. Everybody, you got to have a super diverse family in every commercial and yada, yada. It doesn't bother me.
Every couple is biracial now in commercials. Yeah. There's literally not a single white family to be found on TV anymore because that's verboten. And that's okay. Yeah. It's just so obvious. That's all. It's like, I don't care, but it's just so silly. Hey, there's an Asian guy and a black lady, and sure, they're married with mixed race children. It's like, I get it, but it's like, come on. You're trying too hard is the point.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem with Hollywood is that they're just trying too hard. Like, they're trying too hard to fit a certain woke ideology and kind of hit their diversity quotas instead of just telling good stories. I think that's why Top Gun Maverick was so great. I think it took a legacy property and it didn't destroy it the way Disney did with Star Wars, you know? And so I think that's why it was so popular. And I think Yellowstone is kind of the TV version of Maverick as far as Top Gun Maverick, as far as not any relation to the story, but just as far as the kind of thing that appeals widely to Americans and especially a segment of Americans that have been forgotten by Hollywood.
And what it also does beautifully, and I know for people that don't watch it, you may be bored to tears, but I would encourage it. Although it is, look, I'll also say there's some very adult themes. Like, I don't want to mislead people. It's like it can get dark and it's pretty salty and there's language and all that stuff. So if you're sensitive to that sort of thing, you should be forewarned. But there is a particular storyline, and again, I'm not going to get too deep into it, but there's literally a discussion about what progress is and what progress means versus people who oppose progress for the sake of progress. And I love that. There's an actual political discussion about being anti-progress and why that's okay. And I love that. I think that's kind of smart.
Yeah. And obviously, I won't spoil it and say who said it and why they said it. But I mean, I absolutely agree. I think it's kind of a constant thing in politics that, like, we have to defend ourselves for not wanting to trans the kids or not wanting to have critical race theory in schools and not wanting all of this quote unquote progress. And I think if you want to change something, from what has worked for so long throughout humanity, you should have to be the one that makes the argument of why that's a good thing and why we should do it. You know, and instead, in our political culture, it's the total opposite. It just makes no sense whatsoever.
Bonchi is a contributor at Red State. One last thing. I don't know that you've written about it. Maybe you have. I'm sorry if you did and I missed it. But are you a football fan?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, so I just kind of your 30,000 foot view. I haven't really gotten too much into this, but I predicted at the beginning of the week that they were going to make this DeMar Hamlin story an attack on the game. And of course, you know, predictably, people like Joy Behar and Sonny, what's her name, that nobody knows, and I don't know why she's on TV, they had this to say yesterday. Take a listen.
Right. I mean, my kid played football. He was recruited for college and he got a terrible hamstring injury getting hit. And I saw him collapse to the ground. Thank you. And he went through physical therapy for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And he realized at that point, that could happen to my brain.
Right. Yeah.
And so he quit. And he quit. And it was a very hard thing for him because he loved doing it.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to turn people away from the sport because, I mean, I went to Notre Dame. It's like faith, family, football. It's a big deal. And it's a $105 billion industry.
Yeah. Only 45% of Americans think that tackle football is appropriate. Wow. Heterosexual men voted the most support for kids doing football, and conservatives were more likely to support youth tackle football. Just saying.
So I don't think it'll turn people away from.
I don't even know what that means, but you care to respond?
You gotta love the heterosexual men.
Of course,
there, like we are just the bane of the world, aren't we? Like
we're the worst. God. White straight guys are the worst, aren't we?
The worst. Yeah. I mean, my 30,000 foot view is that I don't care what Joy Behar and her friends say. That's my 30,000 foot view. Like, football is a great sport. It's an American pastime. It is the American pastime, in my opinion. I think the safety advancements they've made are incredible. You're talking about, I mean, the other day I put out kind of the stats on Twitter about how many players there are in the NFL, how many games they play. They go through training camp, you know, and you're talking about a tragic injury. As of now, I think he's going to pull through, but it's a tragic injury, but it's an incredibly rare one, like to the point of I don't even know if it's ever happened before. So to take one single instance of a game that has lifted tens of thousands of people out of poverty because they've become professional football players coming from nothing, and to try to destroy that game over this instance, I think it's just a gross kind of use of that injury to push someone's own political beliefs, and to turn it around and make it about conservatives and heterosexual men, that's just insane.
Yeah, well, that's just what a white lady loving straight guy would say.
Yeah.
Bonchi, thanks a lot for spreading your bigotry this morning. I appreciate it. And your heterosexuality. It's very kind of you.
Absolutely.
Happy New Year.
You too. See you later.
Telephone number 610-850. You ever heard anything so dumb in your life? Heterosexuals and conservatives, I'm just saying, says Joy Behar, like she said something profound. Like she did her own little football spike there in the end zone.
But Chris, like you do this for a living. You speak publicly for a living. Like, where did that come from? Like, that was completely shoehorned into the conversation. It came out of nowhere.
It's sad when your existence is to do nothing but polarize. I mean, when you wake every day and you that's sad. That's a very empty, miserable way to live your life. To look at everything through the prism of how do I politicize this? And I've marveled at it for years. People on the left wake up every day looking for a reason to tear down, to destroy, to segment, to divide. Every single day, it's what moves them. I try hard to not let it make me angry. I'm trying to move into a place, particularly as a Christian, where I don't get hateful and angry back. I just pity them. I mean, I'm not going to win them over by fighting with them. So now I just find that I look at people like them and I find them sort of pitiable. I don't know what else to say about it. You know, I wanted to take just a second today to, and I don't want to belabor the point, but I wanted to share something with you that's on my mind this time of year, every year, for the last four, as a matter of fact. And the reason I know it's four is because today marks 4 years of my sobriety. And I share that with you because I know that in the past when this subject matter has come up, and I've interviewed folks who have talked about their own sobriety, I typically will get a note or two at least from someone out there who is struggling with it themselves. And so I just would like to say to you that if you find yourself in the grips of dependency, you aren't alone. I know exactly what that feels like. And I fervently, even though I don't know you, I pray for you to have the transformation in your life that I experienced. And I did experience. People ask me from time to time, how did you kick it? By definition, I suppose I was an alcoholic. I don't defining that and what that means and what's that looks like. Was I Nicolas Cage and leaving Las, or, you know, what was that, leaving Las Vegas or whatever? No. I suppose by definition, I was what you might call a functional drunk. I showed up for work and I did my job well. And then, you know, it was turn it on until bed. And the amount of money, frankly, and time that I spent just self-medicating, I came to learn later. It took me years to figure out why I was doing it and that I was even doing anything that was objectionable, at least to me. And it wasn't until I had a very, very specific, and I, you know, for some people, I know this is going to sound a bit much, and I never mean to try to turn people off or sound like I'm lecturing or giving a sermon. And I don't mean to suggest that this is the way this works for everybody. And for some people that struggle, this is not enough and you need professional help. And for some people that struggle, maybe it's Alcoholics Anonymous, counseling, maybe you go to detox, you have to go away. Some people, and I'm very well aware that a lot of people kick it and then fall right back into it. Sometimes, you know, Joe Namath comes to mind as a guy who I guess had been sober for something like 7 years or something. And then you remember he had that terribly embarrassing sidelight incident with Susie Colbert on TV a few years ago, if you remember that, trying to kind of kiss her and he'd gotten really drunk. And so I'm mindful at 4 years of sobriety how you could fall right back into it if you're not on your guard. But I will tell you that I honestly, and I mean this, I don't have a desire to drink today. And you say, well, how does that happen, Chris? Why did that happen? It is only because of the power of Almighty God. I was in the middle of a church sermon one morning on a story on the man at the pool of Bethesda. It's in the book of John, if you care to read it. It was a really inspired message, at least to me that day and on that day in that sermon. That story is, in short, about a guy who's infirm, and this pool is a healing pool, and the biblical story is, you know, the angels stir the waters, and you wait your turn to try to get to the pool to heal, and this guy's kind of in the back. He's been laying around on a mat for 30 years, can't get well, and Jesus approaches him and says, do you want to get well? The question and the whole thesis of the sermon was, do you want to get well? Do you want to get well? Do you have the desire to? Do you really want to? Because if you do, I'll help you. And that message that day resonated with me. I felt, I heard, for the first time in my life, I heard what I hear people say often, that they heard him speak and move, felt it physically move in their lives. And that was the day that he said to me, are you serious about what you believe? Are you serious about your trust in me? Do you believe what you say about my power? Do you believe that I am a healer? Your worries and the reasons that you drink and your anxiety and all the things that cause you to drink, what is that saying to other people about me if you mean what you say? I mean, folks, the number of times over the years that I sat in church hungover, terribly hungover, it embarrasses me now. For myself, not for any other reason, but because what does that communicate? I know why I was drinking the way I was, and what I was communicating to the outside world was, while I was a person of faith, I was showing that I was completely out of control and that, you know, I drank to quell all my anxieties and all my fears and all my stresses, and that I needed booze to do that. And no, the answer is no, I didn't. No, I don't. I need Christ. That's what I need first. And he had a serious talk with me that day. And folks, I have to tell you, on this day, which happens to be, and I'm not saying this for well wishes, I'm not, it happens to be my birthday today, which also makes this kind of an interesting story. On this day, on my birthday, 4 years ago, Christ, in a very real way, put it on my heart to think deeply about why I'm drinking and to lay it on him and hand it over and say, I don't control this universe, I don't control the world around me, but I give my hurts and my hang-ups and my struggles over to you, and I'm asking for your help. And I went out to my car after that sermon, and I fell apart. I absolutely fell apart in tears. I sat in the church parking lot and I cried, and I totally submitted to him that day. And this is absolute truth, and I know it's hard to believe for people who are dependent, but the day I did that, it completely went away. And I do not, and this is the truth, I do not desire booze today. I don't crave it. I don't need it. I don't reach for it. It doesn't bother me if other people do it. No, I'm not a scold. I don't run around wagging my finger at other people. I'm perfectly capable of sitting down with other people who are enjoying their drinks. I don't think drinking is inherently bad. for me, I can't handle it. I abused it, and now I know why. And I didn't want to be that guy anymore. And so I share that story with you, and I've kind of committed now that annually I will share this story with people because I want you to know that I understand what it is to feel gripped by something you don't control, and I understand why you're doing what you're doing. And today, when I see people, I was at lunch with a friend of mine just over the holiday, and a guy was sitting at the end of the bar by himself, and he fell off his bar stool. I mean, he was so inebriated. He was sitting there alone, and it was the middle of the day, and he fell flat on his face on the floor at the bar, you know, in the restaurant we were sitting. And, you know, they helped him back up, and I don't know, he stumbled on, but it was loud, and it was obnoxious, and it stopped the whole restaurant. And I said to my friend, I don't know how close to being that guy I was. I'm sure more than a few times I've embarrassed myself. You could ask my wife that. You know, I got a DUI years ago that I regret to this day. It's the most shameful thing that I ever did in my life for me. That had never happened to me. The arresting officer was a listener, for heaven's sakes. It doesn't get more embarrassing than that. He knew who I was as they were booking me. That was not enough to stop me, though. You'd think that kind of shame and embarrassment would be enough. That wasn't enough. It was the power of our Lord and Savior, my Jesus Christ. That's what saved me. That's what turned this around for me. And so I want you to know that there is hope if you are somebody out there who is struggling with this. And I want you to know if you truly are committed to getting well, if you really want to pick up your mat and get well, you can. You can. And he's there and he's ready for you if you're ready, truly ready to submit and invest in him. He'll take this from you, this grip of addiction you're in. And again, I understand that does not mean everybody who drinks is addicted. Please don't take this as a lecture on drinking, period. A lot of you enjoy a beverage or two or three, or maybe once in a while you have one too many. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about guys like me who couldn't function through a day, not one single day, drinking 7 days a week for hours at a time. It's a prison. It's not a party. It's not fun. It's not funny. And for years, I thought it was. I thought it was something I could kind of embrace. I thought it was like a real life Dean Martin, and I thought that was, you know, being the life of the party, and that's what it meant. And it wasn't. It's destructive. And it's not giving the Lord his best representation in me. So I hope you'll forgive that if that's a little out of place here or that's not typically what you're accustomed to from me. It's not that I mean to sound heavy or lecture anybody. It's just that I know that there are people who battle. And it doesn't matter. There are conservatives who are battling with this. There are liberals who are battling with this. There are atheists who are battling with this. There are Christians who are battling with this. This cuts across all party lines, all racial lines, all gender lines, all faith lines. This is a human issue, and it's a human problem. And so just from one human to another, if you're going through it, I understand. And I'm cheering for you. And you can steer out of it. All right, 610-850-0990, the number. 610-850-0990. We're online at 990theanswer.com. Let's go to Bill, who's been waiting in Exton. Bill, I'm glad you called. Happy New Year. Welcome in.
Hey, thanks. Happy New Year, Chris. Hey, listen, hearing you talk about that story about the man at the Pool of Bethesda, I've got to ask, are you familiar with a TV show called The Chosen?
You know, more than a few people have brought this show up to me and told me I should watch it, and I have yet to do so. Tell me about it.
I'm going to pile on to that request. You have to watch it. So first, you have to go online, either on YouTube or Facebook, or watch it through the Chosen app. It is an amazing telling of the life of Christ, but it's through the Chosen, the disciples, Mary Magdalene, people that he healed, and they do an amazing telling of that story of the Pool of Bethesda. It is amazing.
Well, now nobody's told me that. Now you've just made a total believer out of me. Where do you find it?
Okay, so either search it on YouTube, go on YouTube, they have a Facebook presence, or just look for an app that's called The Chosen, or you can just go on thechosen.tv, and you'll find it there. They're in their third season. It is the best telling of biblical stories. It's not cheesy, hokey Christian theater. This is well-done production. It's amazing.
Wow. Bill, thank you. Now you've made a believer out of me. I promise I'll watch it.
Tell you, be careful when you watch the episode. I forget which season. They're in their third season now, but you'll be brought to tears when you see this story, especially knowing, you know, the personal connection that you have with it.
Bill, thank you. Thank you for the recommendation. That sounds wonderful. I'm looking forward to some uplifting programming, so I'll look forward to that. I will watch it now. Thank you very, very much. Have a great year, and thanks for listening. Stay in touch. Let's go to Rick in Roxborough next. Rick, I'm glad you called. Good morning.
Hey, Chris. First of all, happy birthday.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate that.
And I'm glad you brought this subject up about your sobriety, because I kind of was dealing with the same thing back in last March. Went drinking with some neighbors, and I just really had a bad night and, freaked out with, some things that were happening physically. And I was in good shape, but I still flipped out. I mean, it's coming from a guy that broke his foot in Jamaica back when I was 25. I was really, really drunk, and I got a DUI, too, right before 9/11, 2001, like that August. And, looking at it now, having two kids, just that last year going through a month of just, like, anxiety, a thunderclap headache and stuff like that. I just said, I'm done drinking. Because I theorize, and, to me, God's everywhere. God's like the force, and that helped me get through it. Meditation, just relaxing. And to me, I just theorized in my head, if I drink when I'm happy and I drink while I'm sad, well, when don't I drink? And that's when I just stopped.
That's profound. That's pretty profound. We drink when we're partying. We're drinking when we're depressed. So, yeah, in theory, you're never not drinking then if you're using excuses like those, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I feel your pain, and congratulations, you're 4 years. I never say I quit. I keep going to that next year and just see where it goes.
Yeah, you've always got to be on guard, right? You can't ever say you're over it. You got to stay vigilant. So thank you for sharing the story, my man. I appreciate that very much. Happy New Year, and congratulations. 610-850-0990 is the telephone number, 610-850-0990. Let's head to Greg. Greg's in Doylestown. Greg, glad you called. Good morning.
Good morning, Chris. Hey, this is not my point, but congratulations on your sobriety. For someone who's not religious, that was a pretty impressive story that you told.
Thank you.
I think that actually... I've had people in my family with that issue, and I wish they could have heard it because I think it can help them a lot.
Thank you.
I also wanted to thank you for your interview yesterday with the new chairman of the Freedom Caucus, and I forget his name. Because when I thought about what he said during the day, and you kind of step back and take the emotion out of it, what those 20 people were asking for not only doesn't seem unreasonable to me, I have to wonder why you even have to ask for that. I would think, or I would like to believe, that whatever party you're affiliated with, that would be part of the core purpose of the party. So what exactly are the other representatives supporting with Kevin McCarthy? And, you have to ask, is it going to be another go-along speaker? I mean, we've had Dennis Hastert, John Boehner, and Paul Ryan. I mean, do we really need a fourth in that line? And I think it's all Republicans should ask themselves that.
I have yet to hear, and this is a sincere question. I brought it up earlier. Have you heard, and I mean this, this is not even a criticism. I'm asking sincerely, have you heard one impassioned pro-Kevin McCarthy speech?
No, I haven't. And what's even more disappointing to me is Kevin McCarthy should be out there making an impassioned speech about why he wants to be speaker and what his beliefs and how he's going to govern. I don't want to hear, well, we're going to start investigations, we're going to do this. Kevin, I'd like to know what you believe in. Say what you want about Nancy Pelosi. Love her, hate her, but you have to admit, she was a very effective Speaker of the House. I would hope that my party could generate somebody to that level of leadership and the ability to take a party in the direction that supposedly it wants to go in.
I couldn't agree more. Greg, thank you for the phone call. Tucker Carlson took Dan Crenshaw apart yesterday. It was just beautiful. Crenshaw, the Texas congressman, the eye patch guy, who is becoming just vicious in his criticism of his colleagues who do not support Kevin McCarthy, and Tucker was having none of it. Sometimes I just like to sit back and enjoy the work he does. Take a listen.
So if people oppose you in an election, typically you try and win them over. You assuage their concerns. You promise them things. You wheel. You deal. You trade some horses. You massage their egos. You don't scream at them. And yet today, Congressman Dan Crenshaw of Texas, a surrogate for Kevin McCarthy, did. In fact, he did what neocons always do. He labeled anyone he doesn't like a terrorist. Watch.
Those of us are saying, like, look, you pushed us into this corner, so now we're saying we won't vote for anyone but McCarthy. That's why we're saying it, because we cannot let the terrorists win.
Oh, they're terrorists now. It's hard not to see the connection, because over the past few years, pretty much every part of the war on terror has been turned against the domestic political enemies of the neocons. So now they're just coming out and telling you what they told you about Iraq. Either you're with us or you're against us. You're on the side of light or darkness. You're good or evil. Dan Crenshaw went all the way, as neocons always do. He proceeded to go to CNN to call his political opponents enemies of the state. Looking for a little Soviet-style politics? Watch this.
This handful of members is very clearly looking for notoriety over principle. That's what it is. And anyone who suggests differently is in some kind of make-believe fantasy reality. But if you're a narcissist, and you believe that your opinion is so much more important than everyone else's, then you'll keep going. And you'll threaten to tear down the team for the benefit of the Democrats just because of your own sense of self-importance. That's exactly what's happening here. We will not vote for anyone else but McCarthy. These people think they're stubborn or more stubborn. They think they're not going to get the committees that want. Well, obviously, they won't. But it's going to be so much worse than that. You know, they are enemies now.
So you may like Kevin McCarthy or not. Both are allowed. But no matter how you feel, you have to acknowledge, if you're being honest, that people who don't like Kevin McCarthy have a reason for that. They have real concerns, real issues. But you'll notice that Dan Crenshaw didn't address any of those, none of them. Instead, he impugned their motives, their character, their intelligence, their moral standing. They're narcissists. In fact, and we're quoting, they are enemies now. Now, what you just saw as Dan Crenshaw spoke, what you just saw is the snarling face of the donor class, revealed for all to see finally. The deep loathing of disobedient voters that may be their most passionate secret emotion. But they're not bothering to hide that emotion anymore. Now you know how they really feel.
The snarling face of the donor class. You know, I kind of sit here and just go. And Tucker's the kind of guy who can sit with a team of people and write so beautifully and then deliver it in an hour. I marvel at it and I admire it. And sometimes I just say, oh, wow, I wished I'd said that. He's just fantastic. And one of the only people on Fox, I'm sorry to say. You'd think a whole network would be full of people like Tucker, but no. Tucker seems to be the only one on the network who's not pom-pom shaking for Kevin McCarthy at this hour. I thought you should hear it. In Florida, where woke goes to die. Ron DeSantis down there mandating all state university systems report their funds spending on CRT and DEI specifically. DeSantis, this from Fox News, mandating all state universities report their expenditures and resources used for campus activities that relate to diversity, equity, and inclusion, as well as critical race theory initiatives. This request just before the new year. In the letter, it said, quote, this letter is a request for information from the Department of Education and the state university system regarding the expenditure of state resources and programs, and as well as initiatives related to diversity, equity, and inclusion and critical race theory within our state colleges and universities. The memo mandated that each Florida college system and each state university system institution provide a comprehensive list of all staff, programs and campus activities related to diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, as well as critical race theory initiatives. As part of the request, each institution must also detail costs and expenditures related to each program or activity. Harumph to the governor. Similarly, in Kentucky, the treasurer there is pulling all state funding from all financial institutions. All state investments are being pulled from all state partnered financial institutions, investing in the same mandates, as well as blocking and boycotting development of fossil fuels and other things. So the pushback is on. Good for them.
Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer. WNTP, Philadelphia, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. For more than a decade, he's been your destination for news, opinion, and passion.
Thanks for hitting so many nails on the head. And your callers, your audience, is to be appreciated, too.
You really have helped to keep me sane, and I listen to you pretty much every single morning.
Even having my favorite president call us and tell us we need to knock this off. I think it actually needs to be reversed. The president needs to tell Kevin McCarthy that, sir, you do not have the votes, and it's time to withdraw. With that, I yield. Thank you.
This is Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaulle on Philadelphia's AM 990, The Answer, and 990theanswer.com.
Yeah, by the way, who says there's consternation between former President Trump and former Vice President Mike Pence? They agree on this. Mike Pence and Donald Trump are eye to eye on making Kevin McCarthy speaker. They're both out there on social media saying, make our good friend Kevin the next Speaker of the House. Our next guest doesn't see it that way. Neither does Lauren Boebert. He's one of these 21 who, after seven votes yesterday, they still don't have it. They still don't have the number to get Kevin McCarthy the 218 needed. He's Arizona's Congressman Andy Biggs. He's one of the names that's been floated out there. And, you know, Congressman Biggs, we talked with the Freedom Caucus chair now here in Pennsylvania, Scott Perry, yesterday, and we're glad to have you here today, sir. If we're going to have a discussion about the direction of this country and the direction of this party, our system allows for this discussion to happen. Why not have it right now? Who is afraid of this? I'm sure you're hearing this from your constituents, just as I'm hearing it from our audience. Good morning.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, our party has not been as successful as we wanted it to be. Certainly wasn't successful in the midterms. But the reality is, if you continue to have the same people lead you, guide you, who are part, quite frankly, of the D.C. cartel, that interlocking group of people who really become the uniparty, then you will never change. I recognize that it can be hard. It can feel chaotic. It can feel very uncomfortable. Change always does, even when it's a change for the better. And that's what people are feeling, I think, in the Washington, D.C. bubble anyway. I'm not sure that most Americans are even paying attention, but those who are, they feel uncomfortable. Why? Because we are testing. We are probing. We are trying to get a new path, a path that will actually restore this country to the rightful place as the preeminent power of freedom in the world.
And I want to ask some sort of specific functioning questions here in just a minute or two. But I generally, for our audience, Congressman, your name is one that's been bandied about a lot as a potential speaker. And people have asked me privately offline. In fact, I spoke with a new freshman member of Congress who privately asked me, well, who do you support if not McCarthy for speaker? And I said, I've always been fond of Andy Biggs. And that's just true. I said that. And now I don't know what that means. I saw yesterday Matt Gaetz said Jim Jordan after Jim Jordan endorsed Kevin McCarthy. So there's this notion that some of you guys would be great, but you don't want it. So help us understand that, first of all. What's true and what's not true about that?
Well, you know, I'm a bit of a realist as well. So there are those that are on the other spectrum of my conference who would never vote for me. So it would be very incredible.
Why? Why?
Oh, but because they view me as too conservative, too much of a firebrand, perhaps.
Okay.
You know, let's just face it. We're dealing with a group of people that that have a fairly broad interpretation of what a conservative is.
How much of that, help us understand that, Andy Biggs. Of your caucus, how many do you think feel that being a center moderate Republican is the path forward? How many? Could you quantify it? Is it half?
I would say that, no, I wouldn't even say it's that many. I think you got a more insidious problem. Okay, so I would say maybe you might have 25 to 40, maybe as many as 50. So that's about 20-25% of the conference.
Okay.
Somewhere in that neighborhood. But the more insidious problem is you have probably another 40-50% of the conference who really believe that they're conservatives. But when push comes to shove, they're going to do what leadership says. They're not going to, fight that fight. And that's really the problem.
So can you help me? And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just so we can understand this, how does because I've never really understood this fundamentally. How does a Kevin McCarthy, a Paul Ryan, a John Boehner, how do these men ascend and become this thing that everyone just assumes, oh, well, he's the guy, it's his turn. Media says, well, he has to, that's just it. Where does that come from exactly? Can you help?
Well, that's the DC cartel. That's what I mean. It's the uniparty. It's people get there and they start campaigning. It's the dream of their dreams. So they get involved and they get on the treadmill of doing, oh, I'm going to go dial for dollars and raise it up and give it to the party apparatus. I'm gonna do what the leadership says, so they'll get me on a committee. And they forget that what they're really supposed to be doing is representing the people of their their district, their constituents, and actually adhering to the Constitution. So they kind of lose their way that way, and it becomes maybe it's personal ambition, maybe it's self-aggrandizement, maybe it's them thinking, well, if I could accomplish more if I was a chairman, or if I was on this committee or that committee, it's all pay for play to boot. So, do you raise money? Do you provide money? All those things are really driving these individuals, and they get there and they can be incredibly disappointing to those of, who I call the party base, the base of the party.
Can McCarthy credibly say, Congressman Biggs, can he credibly say, look, the House picked up Republicans. We're the only game in town now for Republicans. And I had a lot to do with that. Is that a fair thing for him to say? Do you agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that. I think that the fact that he raised a lot of money is one of his special talents. But his basically affiliated PACs also chose to go after Republicans, conservatives in primaries. Now, a number of those conservatives actually won their primaries, but they were at that point, they'd been demonized by their own party apparatus. They had to spend money that they otherwise wouldn't have had to spend. So they were broke and they ended up losing the general when we lost seats that we shouldn't have lost. We flipped some seats, but don't forget that Lee Zeldin in New York can be credited with probably flipping four seats in New York.
Yes.
So, no, I don't think that he can credibly say that. What can you say? That's what he's going to say. That's his cachet.
So let's get to your personal relationship and viewpoint. There are 20 of you who've effectively, as of this conversation, who have said no to him. Is this personal? Do you like the man? I don't know him. You and I have much, and I don't know you intimately well, but you and I have had great conversations over the years, so I know you a little better than him. I don't know the man. Is he a trustworthy man? Is he someone that you dislike personally, not trustworthy? How should we think of Kevin McCarthy?
Well, no, I don't dislike him. I mean, and that's one of my colleagues said, you guys are doing this because you don't like him. No, that's not true. We don't like his policies, his performance, and his governing history, because he's been in leadership for 12 years.
Yeah.
Is he trustworthy? I don't believe that I want to be diplomatic when I say this.
Okay.
I don't really believe that he's going to follow through on things that he says. And I'll give you an example. I can give you lots of examples, but I'll give you one. On the omnibus, but before we voted on that $1.7 trillion omnibus, he said, we're going to hold Republicans in the Senate accountable. We're going to kill all their bills and fight them if they vote for this. That's on day one. On day two, he goes over to the weekly Senate luncheon, and he doesn't say the same thing. He says instead, I don't like this. I oppose it. I'm look at all the things that we're going to be working together on, blah, 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 blah. He doesn't deliver the gritty, hard-nosed message that he's profiling to the public and to the House members. Instead, he backs off, and then he comes back out of there and says, I'm going to fight this thing tooth and nail. Well, that is my point. My point is simply this. What do you believe the guy is going to really do when he says he's going to do something?
So can we juxtapose that with former Speaker of the House? I'm loving to say that anyway, Nancy Pelosi. I have known that woman to be nothing but relentless and ruthless in getting what the base of her party wants at all costs. So was she not that way for Democrats?
No, she was ruthless. I don't think I heard complaints from some of her minions that she wasn't always truthful. But the one thing that about her was she delivered what she said she was going to deliver on. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the problem with her is that she wanted crappy stuff. Yeah. And so she managed to deliver that.
Yeah.
And with Kevin, I just think were he to be the speaker for the next 2 years, it's all going to be performance art. It's not going to be real substantive. It's going to be performance.
Andy, you're a serious guy and you're a fair guy. You don't go on cable news and trash other Republicans. I've never seen it or heard it to my knowledge. So you're a stand up guy of goodwill. That's my impression. You've always been a consistent conservative. And so when you see people like Newt Gingrich, who I respect a lot, say you have a moral imperative. You 20 people who say no to Kevin, you're morally objectionable. So he uses that word, moral, which I thought was weird.
We have psychological damage as well. So
yeah, and that you're spoiled brats, says the New York Post, and you have no, you're narcissists. It's like you talk about losing your way. You guys are all elected representatives of the folks, for heaven's sakes. This isn't a clubhouse meeting.
No, that's exactly right. And this is big boy politics. It's rough and tumble, and McCarthy's got he's a member of the cartel. The Washington D.C. cartel, this uniparty there, and these relationships, these interlocking relationships, they're the K Street lobbyists, they're the media, they're all kind of tied up and wrapped together. They're the bureaucracy. Federal bureaucracy, they're all wrapped together. And so when somebody's trying to disrupt it, boy, howdy, they're going to come out of the woodwork and castigate you and say things about you. I mean, I don't even know how this one guy has my cell phone number, but he sends me nasty grams that are really vile, and I block him and he finds another way in, you know? I mean, the point that we're facing is there's big boy politics going on. It's big and it's ugly. But we're going to stay there. We're going to stay the course because this country is too important. And this is an imperative. You don't get change intersections very often. You don't get to exit the path that you're on very often. And this is one to do it. And I'm all in for exiting the path.
He can't. I don't want to keep you forever, but he can't. I don't know mathematically how it works. I don't see a scenario where 20 of you, he's got to peel off 16 of you, Kevin McCarthy does. If my math is correct, 16 of you have to go back to him in order to become speaker. I don't see that happening. So then what is the question? Because I keep hearing this criticism of you guys. You don't have a plan. You don't have anybody else. You don't have an alternative. It's just a food fight for attention, and you don't even know what you're doing. You're just wreaking havoc for the sake of wreaking havoc. So how do you answer that?
Well, I would say Kevin has known, the conference has known for 6 weeks now that Kevin doesn't have the votes. They've been in denial. They've been in the anger mode, and they've not. Then they reached bargaining. Now it's time for them to accept it. And the conference is not just us five. It's just not us 20. It's all of us. And I would suggest that you could take the leftmost member of our conference and put them together with the rightmost member, and you would find a lot of points in common. not the least of which I think we could get a consensus candidate, and one will emerge. And that's the it is just as incumbent on those other people who are in denial to wake up and say, oh, okay, we're not going to have Kevin McCarthy. Who do we want? Who can we support? Who can we live with? And who will be a good leader? It's incumbent upon my fellow Republicans to join us in coming to that conclusion.
Would you be willing if it were you? I know you're telling me basically you don't think you have the votes of support, but I mean, would you be willing to do it? And by the way, how does that work exactly? I mean, you know, Jim Jordan says, I don't really want to do it. But I mean, are you guys kind of if called, you'd try? Or I mean, how? What do you?
Yeah, look, okay. Look, I'm firmly believe that if 218 people, maybe let's say everybody, 222, 218, were to say, Jim, we're voting for you today. I think Jim would say, I don't want to do it, but if that's the will of this body, I'll do it. The same would be for me. You know, I've been thrust in those positions before, and you just say, I had other plans, but I will accept, I will serve. And we do need a change in trajectory, a change of path. And I think Jim would be good. There are others that I think would be good. I like Byron Donalds. I like, you know, people like Kevin Hearns. I mean, there are any number of people that are qualified, capable, and able to serve in that position in the Republican conference. And I think one will come forward with the help of the rest of the conference, who has got to say now, we don't, it's not going to be Kevin. Let's get to work and get somebody else.
You feel confident as of this conversation, Kevin McCarthy is not going to be the next Speaker of the House?
I do.
Okay.
I do feel confident.
Andy Biggs, I know your schedule is tight, and you were making time for us today is really appreciated, sir. Thank you from Arizona's 5th Congressional District. I hope you'll come back and talk with us after this thing shakes out.
You bet. Thank you. Thank you so much, Chris. Appreciate it.
Well, so what about that? It is Biggs just said he is confident. He is certain it is not going to be Kevin McCarthy when this is over. So, listen, all of you that are hearing this is chaos and they don't have a plan, did that satiate you? Those of you, there are some of you, to be fair, there are some of you who say you are out of your minds, DeGaulle. This is just a bunch of aimless people with no plan, just being showboats and being loud and destructive and disruptive for no reason at all. They don't have an alternative. They can't get there. They just need to shut up and make McCarthy Speaker so we can move on. Okay, so for those of you who feel that way, you just heard Biggs. What do you think? Give me a ring. 610-850-0990. 610-850-0990. Was that a reasonable conversation? Did that sound like a reasonable guy with reasonable expectations and demands or not? All these little things in life, they all create this haze. I got to tell you, I can't get over this, and I want to get to the calls here in just a second. Don't go anywhere, guys. Specifically, Tom and Mark, who are hanging on. Don't go anywhere. I'm coming to you. So hang. Just give me 1 second, because for those of you who are just joining the show and didn't hear it earlier, I want you to hear what proper analysis of this fight between these 21 House Republicans and the rest. I want you to hear what proper analysis of this is, and I'm sorry to tell you, it's not coming from Fox. Well, it is coming from Tucker. It's certainly not coming from Sean Hannity. It's certainly not coming from Trey Gowdy or Newt Gingrich or Karl Rove or any of the other talking heads on Fox. Proper analysis of this situation, unbelievably, is coming from Jake Tapper at CNN. Yes, you didn't hit your head. You heard me right. Jake Tapper at CNN. There's a couple of moments yesterday during their broadcast that just blows the mind. As Jake Tapper actually defends what's going on here and explains it to his audience. Listen.
Let me just turn and just say, like, I know the viewers out there, this probably seems like chaotic and insane, but A, this is democracy. I mean, we can't pretend that this is, I mean, I think Congressman Gallagher was right earlier today. He said this is messy and democracy is messy. It's a feature, not a bug. That's true. These people are exercising their right to do that. And a lot of them, I don't know all of them, but a lot of the 20 rebels are voting the way they're voting because they actually want substantive changes to the rules.
I
So this Abby Phillip jumps in and she starts talking about what a rat bastard Gates is. More typical CNN fare that you'd expect, that Gates is a lunatic and Gates is making demands that he can't have and blah, 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 blah. And quickly, again, can't believe I'm saying it, Jake Tapper jumps in and corrects her on this. Listen.
There are some people who have some conception of some things that they want here and there, but Melanie Zanona reported earlier today that one of the demands that was being made by Matt Gaetz, who I think a lot of people believe is probably a hard no, is that he wanted a subcommittee gavel. He wanted a specific job handed to him by Kevin McCarthy, which if you're one of the other, 200 plus Republicans, that's an untenable demand. That's a ridiculous, untenable demand, because what it means is that just because he's holding out, he would get more power just due to that fact. So it's problematic for McCarthy to be dealing with those kinds of demands. And I think as we go along with this, one of the big questions that will emerge is, let's say it's Steve Scalise. Does Steve Scalise go along with all the concessions that Kevin McCarthy has made up until this point, mm-hmm. which are a lot? Does he go further in order to get the votes to be speaker? I think it's for all of the other potential speakers, Republican speakers, they have to ask themselves, under what circumstances will I have this job? What kinds of rules are these people going to demand? Because I think we don't actually know the answer to that yet. And they're probably going to be spending some of the next couple of hours figuring that part of it out, too.
But let me play the devil's advocate here for 1 second about Matt Gaetz, okay? I'm going to defend Matt Gaetz.
Okay.
Can we
roll the breaking news banner?
Stand back. I'm going to defend Matt Gaetz. Okay. And I'm also going to date myself further. When Tom Daschle in the Senate was running for Senate Minority Leader against Chris Dodd, neither of them are in the Senate anymore, he switched the vote of Senator Carol Mosley Braun by saying, you can have my seat on the Senate Finance Committee. And that's how Tom Daschle became the Democratic leader in the Senate. This is not new.
I'm sorry.
I get that Matt Gaetz is outrageous in so many ways. Asking for an Armed Services Committee subcommittee chairmanship does not outrage
me. Well, except that they're anti-swampy, and this seems like a swampy move.
Okay. CNN just cannot stand that Jake Tapper would for 1 minute tell them, why are you people acting like this? This is not smart analysis. This is typical. This is horse trading. This is what goes on. This is trying to exact demands and influence and trying to make sure your agenda gets done. This is a representative republic. This is our system. It is as he said, this is a function, not a bug. This is analysis that should be on Sean Hannity's show. It is not. What you're getting from Sean Hannity is screaming and browbeating Lauren Boebert because she doesn't see it eye to eye with Sean, that his pal Kevin isn't coronated the next speaker. This is our system. Whether you like it or not, it is our system. And I know it's uncomfortable for some people that we don't just coronate a new speaker and move on about the day and keep rubber stamping bills and... But I don't know about you. I come from this crazy philosophy of the less government is doing, the better off we are. And if these people are locked up in nothing but consternation with one another, fine. I still don't, to this day, I don't know where it comes from. This strain of thought in some Americans' minds that Congress has got to be doing something if we're going to be any kind of country at all. I just want Congress to get things done. I just want to see a Congress getting it done. Getting stuff. What does that even mean? What does that mean? What are you saying? You want our border secure? So do I. Do you think Kevin McCarthy does? We're not sure. These people, for instance, want to guarantee they're going to have a vote on that. Term limits? You want to get that done? Does Kevin McCarthy as speaker? Not sure. This group says they want promises they're going to get a vote on it. And by the way, we all understand Chuck Schumer runs the Senate and Joe Biden is still the pretend president. So whatever these people do, it's not going any further than that anyway. So what are we debating? Why the hyper freak out over Kevin McCarthy being speaker immediately right now? Because we got to get things done. You're not going to get anything done. So let's at least have a substantive discussion and about taking substantive stands and forcing issues out into the public where the Senate has to take it up and say no. The President of the United States has to say no. But the House, controlled by Republicans, takes substantive stands and says, here's what we're voting on. We're voting very specifically on this spending. We're voting very specifically on term limits. We're voting very specifically on a border. Here, Senate, I defy you to turn it down. Here, Joe Biden, I defy you to turn it down. Do you think Kevin McCarthy is going to be that guy? Well, there are 21 House Republicans that don't. And I tend to understand their skepticism. That's all. Okay. 610-850-0990. Look, if you see it differently, I'm not going to browbeat you. God bless America. You're an independent thinker. You see it differently, fine. 610-850-0990. Tom is in Bluebell. Glad you called, Tom. Hello.
Hey, Chris. First thing, amen to what you said. If they can never convene another Congress because of this, that's fine with me if they get nothing done for the rest of my life. So amen to that. But thank God I haven't had enough time recently to read up on why I should hate Kevin McCarthy or love him. So I don't have a dog in his fight, really.
Sure. But me either, really, truthfully.
Right. So I can't help but just looking at this on the face of it, I can't help but think about compare it to the libertarians versus the Republicans. Like, I feel like the libertarians are a small group that I might agree with a lot of what they say, but when they can end up costing Republicans elections and power versus the Democrats because the Republicans never seem to be pure enough. And I always get mad at them because I feel like at some point, you know, you've got to pick the lesser of the two evils. And, you know, you can use the next 10 years, 5 years, whatever, to try to persuade the other 90% of us to become libertarians. But in the meantime, try to do the least harm and don't run against the Republican or vote Republican. And, you know, save the country for a few more years and then make that argument. And I can't help feeling like the same way about my gut tells me I probably like these 20 people better than the rest of the congressmen. But at some point I realize that I'm like a right wing lunatic and the rest of the world doesn't agree with me. And I've got to take the least. And you know, take the what you got right now and get a Republican in there, and at least, you know, whatever you can do, the investigations or whatever they want to get done, knowing that they only have one branch of the government, let's get on with that. And, you know, if you want to give me a list of the stuff that Kevin McCarthy's going to do in the future and I should be watching for, and so I hate him as much as you, and that you can start swaying me over the next couple years, do that. But It does seem narcissistic to think that you're gonna put up somebody name and name that those 200 are then going to switch over. Doesn't that seem, you know, as much as I think the Democrats ought to all vote like I do, I don't think that me saying no is going to make them all switch over to me. And I don't see why these 20
here,
people.
Yeah, but here's the way this I know you understand this, Tom. The way this works is these 20 people, until they get the concessions they feel they want, they're going to continue to oppose McCarthy. Now, McCarthy can give them the concessions or he can withdraw himself, at which point you're now talking about a body of people who have to agree on somebody new. So it's not a zero-sum game like it's McCarthy or nobody, right?
McCarthy,
and there will be a speaker.
Well, if McCarthy withdraws, who are you going to vote for that everybody's going to agree on?
That's literally what these people have to get together in a room and decide. And that could take weeks.
Well, the guy you just talked to named a couple people. You probably know way better than me. Does any of them really have a chance of the other 200 Republicans in Congress saying, okay, we'll vote for him now because you threw that name in the ring?
I think, but see, here's the thing. I mean, I know you get this. I don't mean to condescend. There are, you know, hundreds of these members of Congress don't want to get crossways with the guy they think is going to get speaker because they're scared. They're genuinely intimidated. Like, they assume McCarthy's eventually going to become speaker. And if he becomes speaker and they've opposed him, that's when retribution happens. You lose your committee chair. You lose, you know, you're not on a committee you want to be on. Like, paybacks are hell. in politics. And so these guys are all afraid of McCarthy. So they're staying with him now because they assume he's coming. But once they're free of him, if McCarthy says, you know what, guys, this is bad for the party. This isn't getting any better. I'm going to step aside. Then those 200 people all of a sudden now have to decide what they're going to do. They need somebody new, right? So they're going to have to all have a discussion about who the new person is. That's how this works.
I find it very hard to believe that these 20 people are going to be able to come up with the name that those 200.
It's not incumbent upon them. It's not purely incumbent upon them. At that point, if McCarthy stepped aside, all 200 plus of them will have a debate amongst themselves about who that person will be. And they'll, in theory, discuss that before they come forward.
But do you really think they're going to come with somebody that all 200 are going to agree with now? Or are you going to be right back same boat with a different number? And why, if 20 can say no and hold it up, why can't 50 or 10 or it's only got to be five? So I just don't see how where this is. I kind of agree with the people saying I don't see who they're going to get now that everybody can agree on. If it wasn't the guy who got 91%, is it some guy that hasn't been named yet? That's going to get 100. I just don't see it.
Yeah. Well, it's as you said, are you concerned? Let me ask you this. Does this make you uncomfortable?
Not
this
at
is
all.
Going on?
I don't care if they never, okay. I don't care if they can't vote. To me, it does the real problem with the country. It almost, the real problem is the rest of the country doesn't agree with me. I've gotten used to the fact that 50% of the country thinks I'm a lunatic, right. And half of my party thinks I'm too much the way I am.
Yeah.
So I think unless the people who are voting for all these people change, a lot of this is just a matter of how fast everything happens. So to me, it's slowed down the process until you can win hearts and minds. Mm-hmm. And to me, I don't think they're going to be able to win this right now. I think you got to take the least of the victories and get a Republican and one in there and do some investigations or whatever you can do. And then start. You got your name out there now. Tell me what this guy's doing wrong and tell me why next time I should be able to go to the mat with you.
Yeah, I'll give you an example, Tom, and I appreciate the call. Yesterday I said this. I had a freshman, a friend who is a brand new member of Congress. He's a freshman. He's just been elected. First time. Never been there before in his life. And the very first thing he's got to do is cast his vote for speaker. And he's like all in for McCarthy because McCarthy helped him and he's scared to death to not. And that's my words, not his. I mean, I want to be fair. He didn't say I'm scared of Kevin McCarthy, but I mean, let's be adults and honest about what we're watching. You know, you're a freshman. This guy's come out on the campaign trail. He's helped you. He's given you money and name and all that stuff to get you over the finish line and bring you in. As a brand new member of Congress, and you think Kevin McCarthy's about to become the speaker, you do not want to be the punk freshman opposing the big boss. You don't. So you're the good soldier and you say, okay, I'm with Kevin. Okay, that's what my friend is doing right now. It's my interpretation of it, but that's what he's doing. Now, he'll tell you, oh, no, I believe in Kevin McCarthy. He's our man. He's our guy. He's my leader. He's like, yeah, right on. Sure. I don't believe him, but okay, he's got to do it. Like, he's in politics now, okay? Now, if Kevin McCarthy finally said, I can't win these 21 people or I can't give them what they want, you know what? For the good of the party, I'm going to put my efforts into finding a consensus candidate. I'm stepping down. This friend of mine that I just mentioned is not going to have any compunction whatsoever about putting his support behind somebody new. He doesn't hate these 20 people. He's a conservative. He's not mad at Matt Gaetz or Lauren Boebert or Andy Biggs. He's not mad at them. He's got to be loyal to McCarthy right now. So when I keep hearing this, where are these 200 people that want McCarthy going to go? They want McCarthy because they feel like they got to. It's like, you know, I don't know if there was an office vote on should we get a new boss and you have to hold it in public? Are you going to be the one to raise your hand in the boardroom first in front of the boss and say, yes, I think we should fire the SOB? No, who wants to do it? Because if you're one of the few who vote that way, uh-oh, you got to go in Friday morning and face the guy you said wanted out. Everybody gets this right. Like, it's that easy. It's that simple. But if corporate comes in and says, we're firing your boss, you can all cheer together. Good, the bastard's gone. And now we can find somebody new. I mean, it is that simple. So these 200 people, this idea that Kevin McCarthy is this passion. People just, oh, these 200 people just love Kevin McCarthy and will follow him off a cliff. No, they won't. He's the only option they have, and they're afraid of him. Byron Donald, by the way. One of the names being floated out there, one of the 20 in opposition to Kevin McCarthy. He's one of the names that was voted on yesterday by this group out of Florida. Asked this question yesterday. Are you afraid of retribution here for running around mouthing off as a young freshman in the House? You a little afraid of McCarthy and what could happen if he becomes speaker and you've been doing this?
Are you worried about retribution after the fact? There was threats that folks that weren't going to vote for McCarthy would be kicked off committees. Now you put yourself in a pretty public position opposing the person that could be the speaker. Are you worried about retribution?
Man, I'm 6'2", 275. I'm not worried about that.
Fantastic. Casey's in Philadelphia. Casey, glad you called. Good morning.
Oh, good morning and Happy New Year, Chris.
You too. Happy New Year.
Yeah, thank you. So what is so crazy for me with this is like what you said, Jake Tapper, he's making sense of it all. Yesterday I was on a space and Matt Gaetz was talking on the space. I like when he does that too. He talks to the people. And he said, of all the AOC was defending the Freedom Caucus for, you know, these 20 on some show saying, like, this is actually they're doing, you know, what they're supposed to do. You have a lot of classic liberals that are like, wow, look at them doing what they're supposed to do. And then I go on Fox and Hannity's like, okay, yeah, they could do it for a couple of days, woo-woo-woo, and then they can get back to work again. And I'm like, isn't this the party supposedly of freedom? Like, this was the party that I joined that, you know, the founding fathers of this nation, like, you know, we talk about this 1776 all the time, and you're seeing a little bit of an example of it, and people are like, no, 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 that's enough. Of our own party.
No, it's stunning, Casey. You're exactly right. It's a, you know, we were, our founding was a little messy, you know, and there were a lot of, I mean, guys got shot on the House floor. I mean, it's, or the Senate floor, I should say. So it's, this is not, I mean, having a little tiff for a few days amongst party members as to who should be their leader. Quite frankly, we were constructed for the conflict. And these people that keep telling you that conflict in government is a bad thing, and if you think conflict in government is a bad thing, you aren't really great at understanding what this country's founding is. You need to do some study on understanding that a government in conflict is precisely what the people to whom government is responsible, the people need that tension and that conflict. It's when everybody's rowing in the same direction and rubber stamping $2 trillion omnibus spending bills, that's when we're all screwed as a people. Listen to Gramps and the old crow yesterday. This is trouble, folks. This is rowing in the same direction by both parties.
The United States Senate, Senator Mitch McConnell. Mitch, it's great to be with you. I asked permission if I could say something nice about him. I said I campaigned for him or against him, whichever helped him most. But Mitch, it wasn't easy. And to get this done, and it wouldn't have gotten done no matter all the work so many others have done, and by writing the legislation and dropping it in, it wouldn't have happened without your hand. It just wouldn't have gotten done.
Now, is there a single one of you in this audience that feels good about Joe Biden complimenting the Republican leader in the Senate for the work he did on legislation he's signing? Is there a single person in this audience willing to reach out to me and say, I'm happy that Joe Biden and Mitch McConnell have locked arms as friends yesterday to celebrate the two, what they've accomplished together? Is there any one of you willing to say aloud you're happy about that development? I hope not. You must not be a regular listener if you are. Kevin McCarthy and this fight that's happening in the House right now, this is the opposite of that. And it's a good thing. And it's one we should be patient and wait and let play out. The opposite of what we're watching in the House right now is what you just heard. A frail, feeble, old, pretend president, excited and happy that a frail, feeble, old Republican leader in the Senate helped blindly spend $2 trillion of your money and mine without so much as a vote. That's dangerous. That's dangerous for the country. That's dangerous for a representative republic. That is a uniparty move. There's not a dime's worth of difference between Republicans and Democrats then, if that's what you want. I just want a Congress that's going to do something. I want to choke the next person I hear say that. I just want a Congress to get something done. Okay, they just got something done. $2 trillion. Slapping one another on the back yesterday. Oh, wow, they did it. They got something done. Is that what we want? No, not me. I want a little fight. I'm happy to hear a Congress in gridlock and fighting. That's what I want. I don't want signing ceremonies and backslapping between the parties. That makes me sick. And it should make every American sick, no matter what your party. We were a nation built for healthy tension. It was by design. We're not a monarchy. We don't rubber stamp. Cable news has taught a whole generation or two of people in this country that we just rubber stamp and have ceremonies every few years. No, we don't. We have a very purposeful, well-built, deliberative, highly tense process that has historical tension built into it, if anybody cares to reflect beyond 2 weeks ago. All right. 610-850-0990. Mark, is Mark still there in Wayne? Because I've been making... Mark, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you wait so long. Thanks for your patience. Hello.
Chris, Happy New Year.
And to
that
you.
That little clip you played, and by the way, thank you for saying Merry Christmas during December. That little clip you played just now is exactly why the 20 or 21 are doing what they are doing. I am vehemently opposed to McCarthy. And what this group is doing, Chris, is pointing the spotlight on the real pernicious element that's causing the problems we have, and that's the RINOs. Without them, the Democrats couldn't do what they are doing. I go back to 1976, Chris. I was 18, getting involved in politics. The Republican Party hated Ronald Reagan with a passion, and they've been doing it to conservatives ever since. And I think what the 20 are doing is they know McCarthy wants this more than anything. He'll give them the concession. He wants to be speaker. All they got to do is keep holding out. And I say more power to him. You are right. The way our Constitution was drafted, it was designed for gridlock. It was designed for mess. It was designed to give the people a voice. And you said it beautifully.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate your call. I hope you have a happy new year.
Now, more of Philadelphia's Morning Answer with Chris DeGaul. On Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer and 990theanswer.com.
I've been noticing a lot of these headlines lately. Walgreens and CVS plan to get certification to sell abortion pills. Walgreens, CVS working to get certified to sell pills shortly after the FDA announced it would allow retail pharmacies to dispense the drug to women, drastically widening access to abortion in the United States. The pill, is that the pill you take after you've had sex? Is that what they're talking about?
Yeah. There's a new FDA one too. They just approved.
So you have sex, pop the pill, and that prevents the I don't know. But okay. Well, of course the next fight is it's going to be too expensive. So we need to put it in a vending machine that or just not hump. How about
Philadelphia's
that?
Philadelphia's AM 990 The Answer. WNTP Philadelphia, a Salem Media Group station on the NASDAQ at SALM. 3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.